Finding Common Battlegrounds is an attempt by two brothers, one conservative, the other progressive, to have civil conversations about politics with a little help from their friends.
Okay, everybody, welcome to an episode of Finding Common Battlegrounds, the podcast dedicated to civilized debate, where we, instead of tearing each other apart, we work on trying to find common ground. And our two debaters, Ryan and Josh Cragen, who are polar opposites and sit on the far ends of the political spectrum, will get rewarded for finding common, getting their opponent to, getting each other to agree with them. I award brownie points for that. So we are, today we're going to be discussing the gender gap between men and women, and why that gap exists, and why is it unfair? Are women getting ripped off? What's going on here?
The gender pay gap, not just the gender gap.
All right, fine. The gender pay gap.
I wasn't going to say anything.
There's a gender gap too, but we'll. That's for another time. Yeah. So
Birds and the Bees episode is season 5, I think.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about that today. And but first, our sponsor, Lux Bidets. We sent off a Lux Bidet between last episode and this one to one of our winners. So remember, find someone to invite someone to subscribe to the channel, and then have send us an email just saying who you invited, and we will reward you with a bidet. So we're all big fans here of the bidet, and we think they're great. Let's get started here. Gender pay gap. All right. So I am looking at some statistics here. And basically, yeah, the gender pay gap has remained relatively stable in the United States for over the past 15 years or so. In 2020, women earned 84% of what men earned, according to the Pew Research Center analysis of a median hourly earnings of both full and part-time workers. Based on this estimate, it would take an extra 42 days of work for women to earn what men did in 2020. I've seen that number, 84%. I've seen that fluctuate around. I've seen it 80 as low as 81, but I've seen it higher. So it's in there, that ballpark. But let's go ahead and we'll just jump into this. So format is we're going to each ask each other three questions and try to get agreement. So I'm just going to start with Ryan's question to Josh. So Josh, can we agree that there is a pay gap in genetic counseling, and that men make more money than equally or better qualified women?
Yeah. So I'm trying really hard to start this out with an easy one, and we'll see if Josh agrees. But my wife, Debbie, whose voice is at the beginning and end of each of these podcasts, is a certified genetic counselor. We won't go into details of what that is, but to become a genetic counselor requires a master's degree. My wife also has a PhD in public health and now trains genetic counselors. So she's a genetic counseling program director. I bring this up because genetic counseling, like many other female-dominated fields, has a gender pay gap. Over 90%, and we actually talked about this today, it's 94% as of 2021, over 90% of genetic counselors are women. Women started the profession in the 1970s and have been in the profession longer than men. They make up almost all of the leaders in the profession, from the directors of programs like my wife to the leaders of the professional association, which one of her really close friends is the current president of the professional association. Yet a study from 2020 found that male genetic counselors earn $23,736 more than female counselors in non-direct patient care roles. So it's a very specific kind of role. In direct patient care roles, the gap is a little bit smaller, or substantially smaller. This is after controlling for years of experience, leadership experience, additional degrees, hours worked, negotiation for increased salaries, and all of the other variables, geographic location, you know, how old they are, all of these other things, the demographics that you would throw in there, those variables that might contribute to the gap. The reason I bring this up is because it is all people working in the same profession. which means there is no variation in how dangerous the profession is. This one study, of course, is not novel. The National Society of Genetic Counselors publishes an annual professional status survey every year and has noted that there is a gender pay gap for years. In other words, even in female-dominated fields where women have the exact same qualifications as men or are potentially more qualified, women often make less money than men. This is true in nursing and in primary and secondary education as well, both of which are fields with the majority of women. So, Josh, can we agree that there is a pay gap in genetic counseling and that male genetic counselors make more money than female genetic counselors, even though they're at least equally qualified, even though women are probably better qualified?
Sure. I don't know. I haven't studied the field.
I will send you the paper. I'll send you the professional status survey.
I'm not going to read it.
I know.
Well, I do agree. Ryan, your question is like, genetic counseling, this like what? I was like, did you guys talk about this before or something? Because no. I'm like,
it's very specific.
Everyone knows genetic counseling. Can we just agree on this?
You're asking me to give my take on something I've never read anything about.
Right.
I mean, probably.
You'd have to take Ryan's word for
it. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I'll take your word for it. Probably. But the big question is, you know, why? It's just sexism. That's the only variable that's not accounted for in any of the equations. And this is what I'm going to get into. The big question is why? And I'll build up my case to why I think that's probably misleading. But I'll take your word for it. I don't know. But
okay, sure. All right. So we got agreement.
There's a gap there.
And I think this is a typical setting the baseline, right? Kind of a thing,
right? That's what I'm trying to do is just establish that there are some disciplines where we can clearly demonstrate if we control for all the other things that should matter, there is a gender pay gap. And this one's particularly interesting. Just like in nursing, male nurses on average make more money than female nurses. And it's a female-dominated field, which is always weird, particularly my students. They're always fascinated by that. Like, why is that? And we can talk about why sociologists think that is the case. But
well, good job, Ryan. Ding, ding. You got agreement from Josh. Let's just switch over to his question to keep this going. Ryan, would you agree that there are valid reasons that people get paid more than someone else for doing the same job?
Okay, so I want to hone in on the specific field of ancient Oriental origami basket weaving. Okay.
Sweet. I happen to be an expert on this film.
Yeah.
No, what I want to do, I want to share a story that this was a conversation Ryan and I had 10, 15 years ago. Okay. This was the first time we discussed gender pay gap. And I find it quite interesting. This is revealing the different way that his brain works compared to my brain. Okay. And if I don't know if you remember the conversation, right? We were at mom's house, now Trey and Perry's house. In the main room, and you said there's a gender pay gap. And as I've done multiple times on the podcast, I said bull crap, and then we start talking about it. And here's the example you brought up. You said, I was hired the same year as another professor. She's female. And I get paid more than she does. And I said that doesn't seem right. So I started asking questions. Are you more qualified? Do you work more hours? And you answered no to all the questions. And I ran down the whole list. You already went through the list. Are you working overtime? Did one of you have to relocate? One of you didn't. I went through the whole list and you said no to everyone. And it took maybe 10, 15 minutes for me to get to the bottom of it. Do you remember what the bottom of it was?
No, I may come back to that example today because it's a really good one. But yeah, so we got the bottom of
it. I finally got to the answer and I said, have you worked the same number of years? And you finally said, no. She took a year off to have a baby.
Yep.
Okay. So that's the obvious answer on why you get paid more. You're another year on the graduated pay scale for the university. So you get paid more because she left for a year. And the university was super nice to leave her job open. She had her job to come back to, right? But they didn't pay her for the year she was. Well, they might have. I don't know. She didn't get the graduated pay scale. Okay.
She did.
And it took us 15 minutes to get to that. Okay. So what you were telling me was correct. There was a gap between your pay and her pay. Sure. But what the variable you didn't account for is years worked, time spent at the university. Even though She was hired the same year. Well, and I don't know if that was
one other piece. You have to add one other piece. We both had babies.
Okay.
Right.
That's a whole different argument. Okay. We're talking about the actual pay gap. And now I totally get it. That's relevant to the conversation, and it's an important part of the conversation. Women are disadvantaged in that area because they're the ones that have to have the babies. They're the ones that have the physical transformation and have to leave work. Men don't have to do that. I get it. That is still a factor when it comes to pay, because that's great if a university will leave the job open or give maternity leave and maternity pay. That's fantastic. But to say that she should be on the same track on the graduated pay scale as you, even though she's not there, that doesn't make any sense to me. Why? Because I mean, the idea behind you getting paid more, your graduated raise, is because you've been on the job longer. You have more experience on the job, I would think. She's not there. So you're telling me there's a pay gap and it's not fair to her, but she's not on the job. Okay. If she wasn't on the job for any other reason besides having a baby, say she just decided to take off for a year, or maybe she got sick or something and she wasn't there for a year. You're still going to tell me when she comes back, she should be paid the same as you, even though you were there for a year longer? It doesn't make any sense to me. And that's one thing that people that are big proponents of this, the huge discrepancy of the pay gap, they don't take into account things like this. And again, I don't think Ryan was intentionally misleading me. I'm not trying to paint that picture. He just looks at it completely different than I do. In my mind, as a capitalist, if you're not on the job, why should I pay you? And why should I count your time as time worked? And apparently in Ryan's world, he thinks we should, but I'm sorry. That's one of the things you have to account for the gender pay gap. And yes, a big part of the problem is women take off time to have babies, but you know, that's just a fact. It happens.
So Ryan, do you agree there are valid reasons for people to get paid more money for more than someone else for doing the same job?
I certainly agree with that question, right? So that question, sure, absolutely. You know, people who work harder, who are better at their jobs than other people, even if they're equally qualified, right? If you're working harder, et cetera, like we can certainly agree that there are reasons why somebody would make more.
Okay.
If we want to talk about that specific situation, we can.
Did you think she should make more than, did you think she should have made as much as you?
I don't think she should be penalized for having a baby when I had a baby too. Okay. And it's not that she was penalized in the sense of like somebody cut her pay. It was penalized. I don't want to go into too much detail here, but basically our annual raises are based on evaluations of our contributions in three areas: service, teaching, and research. Okay. If you're not there because of maternity leave, it's on a 5-point scale, 5 being the best, 1 being terrible, right? If you're not there, they just give you a 3. They put you at the middle. Huh. Okay. So because I'm there, because I didn't physically have to carry the baby, that means that I could get a 4.5 or a 5 or whatever I did in those
could've
three areas.
You could have gotten a 1.
Right? I could have. But because I was there, I got higher ratings, which meant my annual raise that year was higher than hers.
Hypothetically speaking, if she's a bad teacher and she's constantly bringing
in 1s,
it
could be beneficial for her.
This could be beneficial.
But we don't keep those people. So yeah, if you're getting 1s, we're going to fire you. But that's where I struggle with this idea. I mean, I get what Josh is saying. It's not like what he's saying is completely irrational and not reasonable at all. She wasn't on the job. So how can you evaluate her, you know, productivity and all of her things? Cause she wasn't there. So they just give her a standard of 3 cause she wasn't there.
Yeah.
Is that really fair? Because I mean, functionally we both had babies.
Just, what else are you going to do? Had to take just give her a 5.
Well, here, let's do this.
That's an open question, and I don't have a good answer to that.
Let's go to this next question, because I feel like it ties in. I think it does a little bit with what you're saying, Ryan. Josh, a two-parter. Okay, Ryan's way.
Got to work in his 5 questions somehow.
Yeah. Can we agree that we would expect women who work fewer hours than men, who have fewer years on the job than men, and women who work only in the home should make less money than men who work longer hours have more years on the job and work outside the home. And then part two, I'll just say part two and then I'll let you break it apart. But, and B, and the second part, can we agree that it is mathematically possible to control for these differences?
Okay. So this is basically Josh's first point, right? Like we're agreeing with the general sentiment here. I'm going to give Josh another easy one that he thinks is going to validate his views, but we'll see if it actually does. As of 2018, that's the data set that I'm using, women are more likely to work slightly fewer hours per week than men. So 38.15 on average for women, that's working women, right? 44.6 for men. So there's a difference in how many hours they work. Have been in their current job for slightly less time than men, 8.53 years on average for women, 9.95 years on average for men. They're more likely to be stay-at-home parents. 15.8% of women are stay-at-home parents versus 3.6% of men. And they're more likely to work in jobs that are slightly less risky. And how this is calculated is a little bit weird, but it's for women, there have been 0.15 injuries in their workplace. So not them, but in their workplace during the previous 12 months. For men, it's 0.25 injuries in their workplace in the previous 12 months. So I'm admitting that there are differences, okay? There are differences in how many hours they work, in how many years they've been on the job, their likelihood of being stay-at-home parents, and that they're working in slightly more less risky environments, okay? So I'm granting all of that. As an interesting side note, women don't actually have less education anymore. They have slightly more education than men. It's because women are more likely to go to college.
Yeah.
Men still outnumber them in advanced degrees. If we could not, and note the emphasis here, not control for those differences mathematically, which we absolutely can, as I'm going to show in my third point, then it would make sense that women would make less money than men do, and the gender pay gap would be fully justified based on these differences. Thus my questions, right? So Josh, can we agree that women who are working fewer hours, all of those things, they should make less money than men? So can we agree on that point, which is basically your first point restated?
Yeah, I know where you're going with this. But...
Right.
And then my second point, can you agree that mathematically, and I know we're not going into all the details, this is what I wanted to do on this podcast, but we're not, mathematically it's possible to control for those differences.
See, I don't know about that because you didn't name all the differences.
I'm going to give you a ton in my next point. Just wait.
The point is that you're saying there's a whole bunch of factors.
Yep.
And we can control for almost all these factors, and therefore
that I would agree with.
I know where you're going to go with that is that there's still going to be a discrepancy, right? But
Well, we have to find out. It's a big question. I'm sure all of our listeners are just waiting with bated breath for my statistics lesson that's coming up.
Bombshell. Yeah. okay. So Josh, sounds like you're in agreement that
kind of
there are factors that
you can mathematically control for a lot of those variables, not for all of them. I don't think you can control for, and I'll give an example in my second point. Of where I don't know that it's really easy to control for some of those variables. Most of them, yes. And when the numbers are properly controlled for, a lot of the pay discrepancy does disappear. And I'll freely admit there is still some, but it's not the 80 cents on the dollar that the liberals are pushing. Okay. There is still some. Ryan thinks he's going to kill me with all of his research. I can see his dumb grin, but
all right, bring it on. Let's move on then. Ryan, this is Josh's question here. Ryan, would you agree that it is not always easy and transparent to directly compare two people working the same job?
I have two parts here actually. The first one,
what? Two-parter. How would, as well.
Why are you guys not giving him crap about this?
Because I don't do this routinely to sneak in 5 and 6 points. Okay. So two things I want to quickly touch on. A couple episodes ago, Ryan brought up the U.S. soccer women's national team as evidence of the gender pay gap. And I called bull crap and then we breezed past it. And what you said was, well, the women are suing the U.S. Soccer Federation. That's proof that there's a gender pay gap. Did they win the lawsuit, Ryan? No, they lost. It was tossed out. Okay, let me explain. And here's what I'm really going to get at. It's really confusing because if you just compare, she's a female soccer player and he's a male soccer player and he makes more money. There's a gender pay gap. Holy crap. Okay, it's way more complicated than that. So I'm going to just very quickly go through some of the numbers. Okay, when the men and women soccer teams, they renegotiated the CBA a couple years ago, like 2016, 2017. And the women were actually offered the exact same
deal. Their contracts. These were their contracts. Yeah.
Well, this is the collective bargaining agreement for anybody that goes and plays for the national team. Okay. Mm-hmm. The women were offered the same deal as the men. They rejected the deal. Okay. And just very briefly, skimming over the numbers, the women wanted more benefits with their contract. Okay. The men just wanted straight up cash with bonuses for games that they win, and the women wanted more benefits. And then the men didn't even make the World Cup, and the women went on to win the World Cup. So if the women would have taken the men's deal, they would retroactively looked at it, they would have made way more money. But that's the deal they rejected. Okay, so they had the opportunity to take that deal. They didn't take it. Then they tried to sue the Soccer Federation, which is ridiculous. Now, here's where it gets complicated. Why did the women reject the deal with more cash and take the deal for more benefits? Okay, it's because they didn't have as good benefits as the men from their clubs. The men are covered by their club teams for way more things than the women are. Okay, and that's where this gets really confusing, and it's not very transparent. You could argue sexism here, but the women just don't bring in as much money overall. Okay. There's some numbers in the last World Cup cycle, the women actually made about the same as the men, which is crazy because the women won the World Cup and the men didn't even qualify.
Right.
Okay. But they made about the same. No. Okay. So you can cry sexism all you want here. And I think this is a different discussion. I hope you guys understand what I'm saying. Women just don't bring in as much money as the men. The U.S. Soccer Federation offered both teams the same deal, okay? But again, it gets more confusing when you talk about World Cup qualifying. The numbers here blew my mind because FIFA is actually in charge of the pay structure for bonuses paid up during the World Cup. So in the 2018 Men's World Cup, the prize money was $400 million compared to $30 million for the Women's World Cup in 2019. That's the pay discrepancy set by FIFA. And that is directly correlated to the amount of money brought in by men's soccer versus women's soccer. Okay, so what I'm getting at is the left is absolutely crying that there's a huge pay gap for the men and women when it's way more complicated than that. You have to take into account how much money the different programs make. You have to take into account how many games they play because they're offset on World Cup qualifying cycles. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So this is way more complicated than just saying the women got screwed because they didn't. They chose their CBA. Okay. Does that make sense, Ryan?
So, yeah. So, and that's what your question is it's not always easy and transparent to directly compare to
look how many factors
the same job and
go into just that. And this is really well-known stuff.
And you're like, there was this, the article recently about McEnroe who made the comment that Serena Williams, the number one rated tennis player in the world, would be about 700th with men. Right. He took a lot of flack for that.
Really?
But a lot of people kind of agreed with him that was a fair assessment. And then, And it's just like, yeah, I've heard a lot of this. I've heard many people talk about like in the NBA that women wouldn't be able to compete and things like that.
The NBA is interesting because the WNBA is financed like 95% by the NBA.
Right.
Okay? The men pay for the whole WNBA. I'm sorry. You can cry sexism again, but I don't want to watch women play basketball. They're not nearly as good as men. I'm sorry.
Yes. And you're just bringing that up as one factor that is that we're not probably taking into effect when we rate this.
Very complicated to take into account all of these factors. Now, here's my second point. Ryan, I just linked a video, if you'll share it. Tom sent me this video an hour or two ago. Well, it was perfect.
I didn't send you anything.
Like, whatever. Okay, edit that out. Tom didn't send me this.
I'm a moderator.
I was going to make this exact point, and I couldn't find a video. And this is where I got it, was from Jordan Peterson. That's where I got the point that I was going to make. And Tom just sent me the video based off the questions I sent him. So, perfect. Ryan,
this show Jordan that. Peterson.
Yeah, it's just a minute long. Show the video, because I was going to make the same point.
I roll.
Jordan Peterson, that's for season two. Come on, season two. Shut up and
show the video.
A fellow sociologist, right?
No, he's a psychologist.
Psychologist, all right.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't listen to him if he's a sociologist. They're a bunch of quacks.
Technically, quack is reserved for psychiatrists and psychotherapists. But
anybody that's a... Well, anyway.
Anybody that's a what? Where was that going?
Watch the video.
On average, you're getting paid 9% less than a man. That's not fair, is it?
It depends on why it's happening. I can give you an example. Okay. There's a personality trait known as agreeableness. Agreeable people are compassionate and polite. And agreeable people get paid less than less agreeable people for the same job. Women are more agreeable than men.
Again, a vast generalization. Some women are not more agreeable than men.
Yes, that's true, but that's right. And some women get paid more than men.
So you're saying that by and large, women are too agreeable to get the pay rises they deserve?
No, I'm saying that that's one component of a multivariate equation that predicts salary. It accounts for maybe 5% of the variance, something like that.
So surely the
answer... We need about another 18 factors, one of which is gender. And there is prejudice, there's no doubt about that, but it accounts for a much smaller proportion of the variance in the pay gap than the radical feminists claim.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
He is so wrong on so many points. I can't wait for season two when we tackle his stuff.
I need to become friends with him just so... So we can destroy you.
You agree?
You
the
whole debate.
Let
me just elaborate.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Real quick on what he said, because I was going to share this thing about the agreeableness trait. Okay, and this is well accepted. The big five personality traits in the psychological community.
I'll grant those. They are
agreeable
accepted.
People are less likely to receive a raise. And again, I'm going to use Ryan as an example here. Ryan recently leveraged a job offer to get a big raise. Right.
Yeah.
And it was because one. He was willing to confront his boss or whoever. And two, he was willing to relocate for the different job. Okay. Both things that men are more likely to do. Okay. Men are more likely to relocate for work and they're more likely to confront the boss and ask for a raise. So Ryan just did that. You just got a raise, right?
Mm-hmm.
A while back. That's kind of hard to account for mathematically. I'm not going to ask how much you're making compared to that same woman that we talked about earlier, but you asked for a raise. Did you demand she got a raise when you got a raise?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I did. Of course.
Wow. Okay.
So what I'm saying is how mathematically, how is an outside researcher going to account for your raise when you demanded it leveraging your job offer and she didn't get one?
Yeah.
That's hard to account for, right? Mathematically, that is difficult to account for.
Do these factors exist,
yes.
Ryan?
Well, okay. So that first paper that I mentioned about genetic counseling, they actually did account for that, which was interesting. So they asked in their survey, they surveyed a whole bunch of genetic counselors, and they asked, have you tried to negotiate for getting a raise? So they were trying to capture those very factors that you're getting at, Josh. And I get the bigger point, right? The bigger point is there are lots of variables. Now, I could go on for hours about how wrong Jordan Peterson is because he just doesn't understand math. And that's clear because he doesn't do this stuff. But yes, we can account for a lot of these things. And what you're going to see in my third point, which is going to be long, and I apologize in advance, I'm trying to account for almost all of the things that you've brought up in past conversations about this. And I really did. I mean, I spent a lot of time trying to pick this apart to figure out, can I capture all of these things? Are we ever going to capture everything? No. It's going to be impossible to capture everything that might possibly contribute to differences in pay. I think that's just, I can grant that, right? It's impossible to capture everything. But we can come pretty stinking close to capturing lots of things. If the pay gap stays, something else is going on.
So, all right. You agree then that there are some factors that are hard to
There track. Are many factors. We're about to find out how many factors there are.
Okay. Cool. Good. Ding, 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 Josh. Good job.
Do I need to go to the bathroom, get a blanket for this?
Yeah.
Get another Dr. Pepper and just buckle up, buddy, because it's happening.
Great. Jeez. Josh, can we agree that the statistics bear out the fact that women, when doing the exact same work as men, tend to make less money than men do on average, as this analysis of a nationally representative survey indicates? That you're about to hear about.
That's right. Everybody.
We just lost every one of our viewers.
I know. Yeah. Drink some caffeine. It's coming. Okay. All right. So just so listeners are aware of what spurred this specific episode of the podcast, Josh has repeatedly said that there, and this may not be fair, right? That there's not a gender pay gap after you control for all the relevant variables. Is that about what you're saying, Josh?
It's an oversimplification because there is, there's something. There's still a small discrepancy.
Okay.
But it's not the as huge national crisis that the feminists and the liberals make it out to be, for the most part.
Okay. And that discrepancy is prejudice.
I don't know what it is. I assume that's what it is because that's the variable that's not accounted for. But
because it's hard to do that. So after hearing that again in our last podcast, I genuinely thought to myself, if Josh is right, that would be a major finding in my area of study, since that is a sociological question. That's what I do. I could land a big paper if it's true that if we just capture the right things and that gap disappears, then like I could land a major paper in one of my big journals. So I dug into the gold standard data set, the 2018 General Social Survey, to see if Josh is right. So that was the motivation behind all of this. Here's what I found, and I'm going to go as fast as I can through this. The average or mean, right, personal income adjusted to 2021 dollars was $62,485. However, that's for everybody. When separated by gender, men's average income was $76,401. So that's men's income. Women's average income was $49,947. That's a gap of $26,453. That gap does not take into consideration any of the differences that we already talked about. Differences in how many years they've worked, how many hours they work, all of those other things. Okay. So we're starting out. Yeah. I haven't factored anything in.
This is just what they're making.
Exactly. So this is without taking anything else into consideration, there's a pay gap of $26,453. Okay.
Yeah.
But I actually have the skills. So I went to graduate school, right, to learn how to take into account all of those things and control for them. Just a little bonus. If anybody out there is into this kind of stuff, I'm happy to send you all of my R code and the data set so you can verify what I've done. Because it's all in code, right? So I started.
There'd be zero people that take you up.
I know. all right. Okay. But if one person does, next time I'm out there, you're buying me dinner, Josh. There. Ha. Because no one's going to, but I'll share it with anybody. I started with just a simple regression model. That's the technique that we use to make sure the gap was observable. Regression is just a modeling technique that allows someone to do this kind of controlling for one or more variables. That's what we're talking about while looking at the relationship between two other variables. We're interested here in whether men make more than women. Our two variables are gender and income. But we think some of that gap is explainable by differences between men and women. If Josh is right, as I add the control variables, so as I put more variables into this model, the difference between men and women should eventually drop to something close to zero. Okay.
Right.
So
right.
The gap should go away, is the point.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. It'll shrink. Okay. If Josh is wrong, the gender pay gap will stay somewhat sizable, is the idea. So with just gender in the model, I've just got two variables, gender predicting income. The gap is exactly what I mentioned earlier, $26,453. So the model is working because we already know that's the gap with no variables in there. Now, just to illustrate how adding a variable changes things, I added just one to start with. And I'm not going to go through all the iterations because this took me hours. I added just one variable to the model, education. My model tells me, okay, so this is just math telling me this, that every additional year of education increases someone's income by about $8,116. So this is the beauty of regression, is it actually predicts these things. In other words, someone with a high school diploma would make about $60,580 a year controlling for gender. So gender is controlled at this point. Someone with a college degree would make $93,000 a year. But what we care about is the gender gap. And here's where this starts to get interesting. When I put education into that same model, the pay gap increases.
Yeah.
It doesn't decrease.
And that's your point of like that women have more
education. Women have more education. Yeah. So the pay gap actually went from $26,000 a year to $29,000 a year.
That's pretty big.
Right. So now I'm controlling for education. The gap actually increased. But I've got a whole bunch of variables that this is all because Josh was like, hey, you didn't control for this, right? So let's think about it. Just one variable. Here are all the variables that I controlled for. And Josh, tell me if I missed something. And I'm happy to kind of wrestle with this. And this is what the discussion
will be. You're just going to rattle off a bunch.
I'm going to rattle off all the ones I did. Education, hours worked. So this is how many hours they work. We know there's a difference. I controlled for that. Age, race, health status. So are you healthier than somebody else? How many kids you have? Whether someone works for themselves or not, which actually makes a huge difference. Those who work for themselves make a lot more money. Whether they supervise other people, how many years they've been on the job, how dangerous the job is, whether they lift heavy things or not, and whether they are a member of a union. Okay. So those are all the things that I put into this model. I was trying to capture all the things that I've heard Josh talk about in the past. I'm sure there are others that you think I missed. Mm-hmm. After controlling for all of those variables, the gender pay gap is $18,038 a year. So it went down, right? Mm-hmm. It went from 26,000 down to 18,000.
Okay.
So it went down substantially because I'm controlling for things that actually contribute to this. But when you actually do the numbers, that turns into women making about 76% of what men make, which is pretty close to the 84% that people are showing. So all of that aside, right, this gets to my question. The numbers seem to bear out after I've controlled for all of the things that I could find to control for, that there's still a pretty sizable gender pay gap. I'm sure there are other things that I could try and find. The data set is limited. It doesn't have infinite things. But assuming I controlled for the big things, this suggests that there's still a sizable gender pay gap.
So do you agree that doing the exact same work as men, women tend to make less money than men do on average?
Read my third question and you'll find my answer. No, so, I don't.
Not agree. Okay.
Because, I mean, you controlled for 8, 9 variables there?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 variables.
But none of the ones that I brought up today. Women leaving the workforce for a year, agreeableness, which is hard to account
for. I controlled for kids. That would entail them leaving.
Not for women leaving for a year and not being there on the graduated pay scale.
But this still counts how many years they've been on the job, which is going to account for that.
Okay. Yes and no, because, let's assume the professor lady of yours has 5 kids. She's going to leave for 5 years and you, the man, will have 5 more years worked. So it doesn't really, the man's going to be putting 5 more years in. But anyway, it didn't control for willingness to relocate for a job, which is a pretty big thing. So you didn't control for, some of the stuff that I even brought up, and there's more factors beyond that. So
you're just saying there's you put in all these factors, but there's still tons more.
Ryan only came up with 76%, and all the other experts are saying 81% or 85% or whatever. So clearly there's some discrepancies here. And
right. Okay. All right. I'm moving on.
Is that unfair?
Ryan. Well,
I mean, let's get his last point and then we'll debate this.
Yeah. Ryan, if the pay gap really is 80 cents on the dollar, why aren't we seeing more lawsuits to remedy the situation?
Okay.
I'm so glad you brought this up.
I'm sure you are. And you knew all of my talking points because I've brought all 3 of these up before. And let me just be very clear on my stance here.
That's not even a yes, no question. Why aren't we seeing more lawsuits to remedy the situation? What's he supposed to say? Right.
Sure.
Because I know you wouldn't agree with this one. So I'll just give him a no. Let me be clear on my stance here.
Shouldn't we be seeing more lawsuits? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe right. Maybe that's how we should say
it. You want to add something to that, Josh?
I it's not like I hate women. I want women to be paid. My wife literally just started. She stayed at home to raise our kids. She just started. Today was her second day at her new job, working a very difficult job as a CNA in the hospital. Okay. Today was her second day. Of course I want her to get paid. Why would I not want my wife to make as much money as possible? So let me be clear that I don't hate women. I'm not trying to say women should not be paid and that men are better at working and we should get paid more. That's not what I'm saying. Okay. I'm not seeing what Ryan's seeing here. And the Equal Pay Act of 1963, okay, John Kennedy, 80 years ago, 70 years ago? I'm bad at math.
60 years ago.
Oh, yeah, 60 years ago. Thank you. It's been on the books for 60 years that you can't pay a woman less than a man or a man less than a woman. So if you can prove that, if it's easy to just say, hey, I'm doing the same job as this guy, you can make a lot of money suing a company. And you know, Google just had a big class action lawsuit against them. So it does happen. But if it really is 80 cents on the dollar, as Ryan says, 76 cents on the dollar, where are all the lawsuits? Wouldn't you each know a bunch of people suing their company saying, you know, I'm not getting paid as much as that guy.
The other argument I've heard is, why wouldn't I just have a company and only hire women if I get a 20% discount on all women?
There you go.
Right? Is that
so, yeah. So let me answer ahead, that by asking Tom a very quick question, because Tom has worked in the private sector, right? So he's worked for private organizations. Josh is self-employed, so this is different. Tom, did your previous employer make everybody's salaries public?
No.
So hopefully that answers a big part of your question, Josh. In industries where salaries are public, the pay gaps are much, much smaller. So my wife works for the University of South Florida. That is a public university. Everybody's salary is public. Everybody's salary. When you can see salaries and when you can see salary differences, it's pretty easy to go into your boss and say, hey, I've been here just as long as this person. My qualifications are the same. Why am I getting paid less? And they will avoid lawsuits by changing your salary.
But at my university,
I don't know anybody else's salary except the five highest paid employees. And that's because we're a nonprofit and they have to report the five highest paid employees' salaries. Otherwise, I don't know anybody else's salary and we're not allowed to tell anybody else our salary.
Let me hit you with this. Capitalism is really the great equalizer, because the only color capitalism sees is green. Okay. As a business owner, I'm going to hire the person that makes me the most money. And unless I'm just out and out sexist or an out and out racist. Right. And I guess those people still exist, but most of those people are not going to be good business owners. Mm-hmm. You're going to hire the person that makes you the most money. Okay. End of story.
Yeah. So, but this is not going to end where you think it's going to end, but keep going.
Well, tell me why. Cause again, I'm open to be persuaded on this issue. I wanted to start with that and I forgot to put that out there, but I don't, as a business owner, why would I hire a man and a woman and then decide to pay the man more? Why would I do that if they're both making me the same amount of money?
No. So here's what ends up happening. And I do this little exercise with my students when I show them these numbers, right? So I show them the pay gap and I control for education and I say, okay, now imagine that you've graduated from college and you're in a position where you get to hire two people. You get in, you know, two applications, and if there's no name on them and there's no way to gender them, so you have no idea who they are, you look at them and they're literally like the same. They went to the same school, same grades, everything's exactly the same. All of the same qualifications, everything's exactly the same. Then you find out, okay.
One's a woman. So she won't be there. She'll have to take off her babies.
There you go. Right. As soon as I say that, I say, now you're in the hiring position and you know that you're hiring a 25, 27 year old woman versus a 25, 27 year old man. Which one are you going to hire? And invariably, and my classes are 70% female, invariably the students say, oh, well, yeah, I'm going to hire the man because he's not going to have to take off from maternity leave.
Okay, so we've come full discrimination, circle to my first point.
The discrimination starts before they get hired.
Okay, so that's what we should be talking about is the maternity rights there, because that really is the discrepancy, right? That's what you're saying.
But I would go a step further, and I don't actually call it that, right? I would say that the discrimination starts before they get hired, because more prestigious institutions, okay, they're going to take the men first from that logic. Oh, well, men are not going to take maternity leave. We're going to take them. Men are not going to be the ones who have to take care of their ailing parents. We're going to pick them. So they end up getting picked first out of whatever institution. If you're hiring from Harvard or Princeton or Yale, or if you're hiring from the University of Tampa or University of South Florida, the men get picked first by the more prestigious institutions, which pay more money, leaving a pool of women who are going to get hired at less prestigious institutions where they make less money. So it's not even that they've not been on the job. The discrimination starts before they even get on the job, because employers are worried about what I call the womb penalty. Women pay a penalty for having a womb. So you could have a woman who is already established, like, I'm never going to have kids. I have zero interest in having kids. I'm never going to have kids. But because she is at risk for having kids, people are less likely to want to hire her. And so
I saw an interesting statistic that lesbians make basically the same as men.
Yep.
You did?
Yeah.
That's not uncommon. Yeah.
Because they're probably not going to have kids, or they're less likely to have kids.
So you're paying a penalty for being at risk of having a kid. I'm not disagreeing
with that. That's why I brought that up at the very beginning. It's in my mind, it's a different argument. That's why I started with that. It's a different thing to talk about what you call the womb penalty. Mm-hmm. Granted, it's there. Obviously it's there. But I feel like it's a conflation to say that women are paid less than men without explaining the womb penalty. Okay.
Josh, are you saying that the womb penalty is valid?
Sure. That's why I started with it.
Well, but that it's not necessarily sexist. It's a person looking at it. It's like Ryan said, it's even women that would choose that because it's a productivity factor, not really necessarily. You're not like, oh, I think you both could do just as good a job as each other, but I just don't want you to leave halfway through our major project for 6 months.
If you have two men apply for the same job and they're equally qualified, and one says, I'm going to need a sabbatical in 3 years, I'm just going to have to leave and go to Spain for a year.
Right.
Well, of course you're going to hire the other guy. That just makes sense as a business owner.
Right.
So you can't call that sexism. That's just common sense. That's money.
So can we hit at that issue now? Because I get what you're saying, Josh. I genuinely do. You're basically thinking about this as like, well, all things being equal, ceteris paribus, all things being equal, you're going to pick the person who's not going to leave. Okay. Can we just add one little piece to this? And you may still disagree with this, and that's fine. Do we need kids as a society?
No.
As a species.
Because this is a different argument.
But the government should
mandate that you have to pay for maternity leave and that.
Well,
kind of thing.
No, I'm not even going down that path.
You're just saying it's a necessary thing.
Yeah.
We need to support it.
Yes. Yeah. So we're basically saying we do not value kids and women having kids. And as a result, we penalize them. It is a womb penalty.
And I agree with what you're saying. In my mind, this is a different argument. It's a whole different subject, even though they're related and interrelated. It's a different subject than just saying women make less doing the same jobs as men. In my mind, that's a different argument than saying we do penalize women in the workplace because we need kids and we don't place the value on that. My wife just spent 15 years as a daycare worker. Guess what she makes per kid? Like $2 an hour. Right? It's nothing what people pay for their children to be taken care of. We, as a society, we don't place any emphasis on rearing and taking care of kids, which is criminal in my mind. So I'm 100% agreeing with you. I think the disconnect is I see them as two separate issues. When the feminists come out and say, we're not making as much money as men, It's not because of sexism in my mind.
Can you argue that that isn't sexism? There's only one sex that can bear children. This was your point from the last one, right? We're not getting into intersex individuals. This is not a gender argument. You're saying one sex has the womb.
Yeah.
and we're going to pay them less because they have the womb, but this isn't sexist.
As Tom said, it's productivity. As a business owner, I'm just looking at my bottom line and going, well, if I hire this person, it's going to cost me $30,000 just to pay her to not be here. And if I hire this person, I'm going to make $30,000 because they'll be here. You know, of course I'm going to hire the other person. It's not sexism. It's just common sense.
Here's an interesting idea that I think, Ryan, that I think is interesting is a lot of companies are not mandating, but they are offering this paternity leave, right? Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's going to have an effect on gender, on the gender pay gap, in that if men start leaving for the same amount of time as women when they have children, will that start to equalize the pay?
To balance it out.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. That's really interesting. I hadn't really explored that thought before. But
I don't know if it will, because a lot of companies are still going to be biased to hire the men.
Let's get to the question. Shouldn't there be more lawsuits to remedy the situation? What do you say there, Ryan?
Well, there are only going to be lawsuits when you have documented compelling evidence. And if you can't find anybody else's salary because it's not made public, then it's going to be really hard to sue. Basically, what you have to get is somebody else, right? So let's say it's your company, Tom. We don't have to name names, but the company you used to work for. If I'm a woman working at your company and I think the men who came in, they were hired the same time, they have the same qualifications, they're no better at their job than I am. I've got great evals, but they're getting paid more than I am. I think that. What do I have to do to be able to establish that? I have to get those men to willingly give me their salary information. And then I have to be able to go through a lawsuit where I say the only reason why they're getting paid more than I am is because they have a penis and I have a womb. Yeah. And every one of the bosses and the CEOs can say, no, you remember that one day where you missed because you had to go take care of your mom? And then there was that time where you did this. It's a really challenging lawsuit to succeed. Right. Yeah, because there are a lot of factors.
But I agree with what you're saying, Josh.
I knew you were.
But essentially what you're saying is it's really hard for an individual woman to find these numbers with the big discrepancy. But you as sociologists, it's super easy to count for all the variables and see all the numbers.
That's a little bit unfair.
A little bit, but not really.
I controlled for 13 variables. Okay. And I'm still admitting, I'm sure I missed some things. I mean, one that you offered, which is like willingness to relocate. I don't think that exists in the general social survey. So let's say that I could get another 10 and that I captured everything that you could think of. We've still got a gap, right? There is a gap.
There would still be a gap, but I think it would continue to shrink. Because as you demonstrated with your numbers,
okay,
as you added things in, apart from the education one,
it
went down every time. So the more variables that you can account for, the smaller the gap will be. But essentially, that just brings us all the way back around to what you – and I like your term, the womb penalty, because obviously it's there. I didn't disagree with that at all. That's probably what it comes down to. And that's what we could talk about. I think that's what it comes down to.
Here's my thoughts, and then I want you guys to give your kind of closing – remarks is I do think there's prejudice. I think it's exactly what was said in that video, what Jordan Peters said, that it's a very minor, it's certainly there, but it's very minor. Now, womb penalty, is that an additional thing? Possibly, right? And but here's an interesting thing I would say. I think there are two sides to the womb penalty, in that women voluntarily leaving the workplace. And I did read some articles, and it was a video about Jordan Peters saying he was talking about women, high power attorneys in law firms, and how they can't retain them. And how basically they're saying, well, I have enough money. Now what I want now is flexibility. And that's the benefits I'm looking for, is not more money. And they're like, look, throw money at them. But they're like, that's not what's motivating it. It's they want to now start a family. They want to take more time off for the kids. And they're voluntarily leaving the workforce, which is interesting. And And it was funny. I read that article. And then when I was doing research for one of my videos, this was actually Tucker Carlson interviewing Megyn Kelly. And Megyn Kelly, she used to be on Fox and then she went to NBC. And then she retired and she had a kid and basically like left the workforce at her like peak, right? Probably making the most money she's ever made. And she just left. And he was like, why did you leave? And she's like, I wanted to start a family. And she's like, I wasn't going to, you know, and she's like, basically, and it's kind of an interesting idea. It's like, I'm making tons of money. What do I want to do now? You can now start asking those questions. Once you start making a certain amount of money, you can start asking questions. And it's funny because I work with engineers, and engineers, you know, they're the top of the food chain as far as like money goes. And they start getting weird about their demands of like what they want. And they're like, they want to work for causes now, right? They want to work for companies that are, you know, that's why SpaceX can attract good talent, right? It's like, because they're trying to save the world. And so engineers go there and want to work there. And so they're like, they get really like picky about things they want, and they'll get after a company if they don't think they're being responsible, and they'll threaten to leave a company. And so it's really interesting. And I think that when a woman is all of a sudden making a lot of money, she can make those questions of like, well, do I want to make more money or do I want to do a family? And I think that's an issue. So I think there's this womb penalty, but there's also this womb like that of voluntarily leaving the workplace because they want to because they want to have a family. Right. But it's definitely a factor for sure. But I think it's you know, how much is sexist versus how much it is
sex.
Is sex. Yes, exactly. And I think it's there. I think it's nominal, the sexist component. But all right, Josh, you want to wrap up your thoughts?
So Ryan issued a challenge last time, yelling at me, where's the peer-reviewed literature? Give me one article. Which is, I should have gone off on how stupid peer review is and Pete Bogosian and what his boys proved. But the very first one I pulled up, here's a quote from the summary of the first peer review article I pulled up, which agreed with my exact stance. We conclude that many of the traditional explanations continue to have salience. Although human capital factors are now relatively unimportant in the aggregate, women's workforce interruptions and shorter hours remain significant in high-skilled occupations, possibly due to compensating differentials. And, you know, it went on. But basically it was saying when you take into all accounts, there is still a small percentage, or there's sexism is exists, it's there, but it's increasingly insignificant when you factor in everything else. And I can send you the link to this peer-reviewed article in a scientific journal that I found. It was literally the first one I pulled up, if cool. You would like it.
Send it to me. Yep, I want it.
I'll link it right now.
Okay? Awesome.
Just to shut you up about the stupid peer review crap.
I'll post the DOI in the video so everybody can see it.
All right, Ryan.
Sorry. Not quite done. So, tagging onto what Tom just said, if you go to the most egalitarian place in the world, the Scandinavian countries, where they don't have the societal pressure for people to choose a job, what people thought was going to happen is you would have a bigger mix of men and women in the workplace. They would disseminate and mix into the workplace in equal numbers. And what they actually found was quite the contrary. Women went into specific fields and men went into specific fields. And this is Jordan Peterson, so Ryan's going to immediately reject it. But he summarized it as saying, women choose jobs that focus on people and men choose jobs that focus on things. Okay. Men are more likely to be engineers and that kind of thing. Women are more likely to be nurses. You know, this is the data that came out of the Norway and Sweden, and Ryan would agree, these are the most egalitarian places on the planet. So what you see is women, you know, there's another factor that I think it's hard to account for, and I don't think Ryan accounted for it in his study, that women tend to choose professions that don't pay as much. My wife chose to run a daycare, knowing that she was going to make peanuts, but that's just what she wanted to do. I would never in a million years choose that job. It sucks. Okay. This is a very difficult thing to compare. And so I grant Ryan the womb penalty. There is some sexism. This is a problem with capitalism, probably. I don't think it's the problem that the feminists and the people on the left are making it out to be. But this was actually a really fun discussion. I learned stuff. It's good to challenge each other's views. This was a really fun one. And good job, Ryan. You presented some good views.
Ryan.
I thought for sure Josh was going to go down a path on that last point that I was like, oh, crap, please don't be aware of this. There have been some studies recently. You didn't hit them. And I'll tell people, and I should look it up because I'm going to probably misrepresent it and misquote it. But there has been some recent evidence in Scandinavian countries that women are actually leaving the workforce when they have the option to do so. So in the most egalitarian societies, women are actually choosing to leave the workforce when just the opposite was assumed. If you can even out the pay gap, women will be more likely to want to work. And it turns out that's not the case. I thought you were going there and I was like, please don't bring that up because that actually does in some levels like undermine my argument, but it doesn't really. Okay. I have two points that I want to kind of end with. And one of them is based on a buddy's research that I think is kind of informative, and it goes back to my first point. And then the second one is a question that I think we can end with. Remember I talked about genetic counseling at the very beginning. I'm going to turn to nursing here for just a second. We can talk about all these differences that exist between occupations, and that's certainly true. There are different, you know, women sometimes tend to prefer different occupations versus men. Why they get paid differently, that raises all sorts of interesting issues. We could talk about pharmacy and how pay has shifted in pharmacy, and pay has shifted by different specialties in medicine based on the percentage of women that are in those professions, which is fascinating because the more women that go into profession, the lower the pay tends to go. But I want to just focus on nursing for a second, because male nurses do make more money than female nurses, even when they have the exact same qualifications in terms of years they've worked and how many hours they work. And what my buddy ended up finding is that male nurses, when they have breaks, who do they hang out with?
The boss.
They tend to hang out with the boss, who tends to be male. So guess who's more likely to get promoted?
Right. How interesting.
Male nurses are. So that's why male nurses make more money, is because they're hanging out with the boss at the water cooler in the break room. They're talking sports. They're talking about, you know, their shared interests, while the women are not in those conversations. And when the bosses, who tend to be male, are thinking about who they're going to promote and make, you know, the manager over this ward or whatever, they think of their male buddy, and that's why they get the promotions.
So would you say like better networking skills or just...
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily networking skills. It boils down to, and I know neither of you want to say that that's a sexist thing, but it is segregation or kind of selection based on sex.
Couldn't you also say it could be something as simple in some cases as there's going to be more female nurses than male nurses because it's a female dominated profession. So the males are going to stick out more just because comparatively speaking, quite a bit more rare. So when you're thinking about who should I promote, the male's probably going to stick out in your mind just a little more.
I mean, certainly that could be it.
So
what
again,
I tell my students,
lots of variables.
What I tell my students is if they're female, pick up golf and watch sports.
I don't know.
Right? Because what are you going to be talking about with your buddies, with your boss? If your boss is male, they're going to probably want to golf, and they're probably going to want to talk about sports. And if
they're
you can hold your own,
to talk about it with this girl, though. I think,
but if you can hold your own, right? If you can hold your own on those topics, then it turns out,
or just
that
be
starts
really
to,
good at your job and demand a raise enough. When you think you should get a raise, because the
I wish
thing
that was
is
all
a factor.
So
I'm not saying
my last
all
question, right? My last question was, and I thought it was an interesting point. Obviously, you know, there are women who are leaving professions because they want to start families. I thought it was kind of interesting that we didn't say, why don't men have to decide between careers and families? That they get to have both, but women have to decide.
Or they can abandon one.
Well, they could do that too, right? But
That's what they
why
do
is it that men don't have to make that decision, but women often do? And I think that gets to some other challenging issues in our society. And I get we talked about like the womb penalty exists. Joss isn't sure that that plays into the differences here to the same degree that I am. But, you know, the way that we value women in society and what they, one of the things that they can do that we can't as men, right, which is provide offspring, we don't seem to value that at all. And I think that's really problematic.
Can we cut all of this dialogue back into our transgender debate?
That only, what do you mean?
Women, only women can have babies?
Well, I've always conceded that. Well, I mean, we can put in the quote from Monty Python on the Life of Brian. Where is it going to gestate? In a box? I mean, it's not an unreasonable argument. And I hope people don't think that I'm a homophobe for, transphobe for saying that, right? But at the end of the day, if you don't have a womb, you can't have a baby yet. Technology may change that in the future, and I will embrace that. That's perfectly fine. But right now, you got to have a womb to have a baby. I mean, that's just reality.
A lot of good points, but some good arguments. So I think that was an interesting discussion. Glad we did it. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time, or we'll see you next time.
Maybe. Josh, we may not always agree when it comes to politics, even though we're trying, but there is one thing we agree on. There is only one way to clean up after going to the bathroom, and that's with a Lux bidet.
I've been a proud owner of a Lux bidet for years. I have literally owned a Lux Neo 320 since 2013. That's the warm water model. Talk about happy, fun, poopy time. When I leave the bathroom, I know I'm clean and ready to talk politics in a civilized manner.
Exactly. Using a toilet without a bidet is about as uncivilized as it gets. Civil conversations demand civil hygiene practices.
And that is why our listeners should get themselves a Lux bidet.
And just to be clear, Lux is not supporting one side or the other in this podcast. They support civil conversations and clean butts.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Finding Common Battlegrounds. The music is by Ben Sound. The views expressed in this podcast are those of the participants and not those of their employers. For more information or more episodes, you can find us at findingcommonbattlegrounds.com.
Okay, do I leave it on?
Yeah,
keep talking.
Well, I do want to talk about some stuff. Okay. That lesbian comment, very interesting. I thought that was very interesting. So this is an interesting comment, huh? And I'm not sure if it's sexist or not. I'm going to go into it. Here's my observation. Women do not go. I mean, I think this has been established that, you know, when in my department, I walk past the sales team, it's 90% men, right? I walk past the customer service team, it's 90% women, right? Yeah. And it's like men are in this hot, kind of like demanding sales. You're cold calling. It's not fun. It's uncomfortable. And I think women have a tendency to stay away from uncomfortable positions. And what's interesting is in the engineering department, you know, 50 engineers, there's three of them are women. And three are women. And, you know, this gets talked about a lot, like not a lot of diversity there and stuff like that. And what's interesting is women will be coming more engineering. This is, I don't know how to take this, but engineering is getting easier. There's standards in place, libraries and things that make it a lot of frameworks that make it a lot easier to code, and coding's getting easier all the time. And I think with that, women will come in. It's less stressful, I think. And it's easier. And so I think women will come in. And here's the thing. Men were all there. Now men are going they're going to go other places. They're just going to go other places. Like, how many women are in crypto right now? Like, almost, I've never seen a woman that talked about crypto with me, right? Never. And it's like, they're all guys. They're in places that high risk, super complicated, where you could lose everything, right? Stressful kind of environments. That's where the guys are. They're going to go new places where no one's ever gone. And then eventually they'll standardize it and things like that. And women will come into that area. That's kind of almost like this forefront, right? You're like, there was no women astronauts in the beginning, right? There was no any of this. Maybe that was sexism. Maybe not. Maybe a woman's like, you're not sending me up to space, right? You guys figure out how that thing works. And then after you've killed a few people, I'll go, right? But it's like, I don't know, like if that's sexist or if there's data to that, like, I don't know if it's risk or if it's stress, high stress areas, but there's probably some data there. but that's just sort of been my observation.
I think it's an interesting observation. And you're probably, there's probably some truth to the causal chain here. The point that I just touched on briefly, if you look at specialties in medicine, they vary pretty substantially by gender. So dermatology is primarily women. Orthopedic surgeons, primarily men. And one of the really interesting things about those specialties is the pay gap that exists between them. So if you start to look at the specialties in medicine that are predominantly women, they make a lot less money than the specialties that are predominantly men.
Okay. How much of that is men are more likely to choose a high paying job versus a woman's more likely to choose a job she likes?
We think some of that is there, right? So dermatology is a job that you can balance with having a family, whereas say an emergency room surgeon where you're on call for these really weird time periods might not be as conducive to being a mother who's taking care of your kids. But one of the things that makes this really interesting,
pay more, and then that's maybe why men would choose it.
Well, kind of.
Tom's thing where it's a more stressful job.
Sure. But one of the really interesting things is there didn't used to be the same gaps in pay. So the gaps have gotten bigger as women have gotten into these specialty areas. So you can literally see the more women in a specialty area in medicine, the lower the pay relative to male dominated areas. Okay. And so one of my favorite examples is pharmacy.
Is that a supply chain thing? Because now we're, instead of just drawing on 50% of the population, now we're drawing on 100% of the population. So it's a possible supply chain thing.
It's very possible. Pharmacy, I think, is the most fascinating one because if you go back, and I didn't know this until I went to graduate school, but Debbie's great uncle, it's kind of a complicated situation, but he was a pharmacist back in the 1950s and he owned his own pharmacy and he made really good money. And kind of, if you've ever seen like 1950s movies, right? Pharmacists were always men and they made really good money. They really did quite well. Well, pharmacy is a profession that a lot of women have gone into and the salaries have gone down dramatically as well. So relative to other health related professions, pharmacy has seen salaries drop pretty substantially.
Why do you think it is?
I think
the argument that comes out
is what?
Well, instead of drawing on 50% of the population to do a job, now we're drawing on 100%. So you have more people willing to do it. So you don't have to offer as much money to do it. If you have more people willing to work a job, the numbers are going to go down. It's just.
Well, so that idea supports the same argument I'm making, Ryan. But so I'm wondering is, did pharmacy get easier? Has it gotten easier over time and therefore more women are attracted to it? But and therefore the pay would go down, yeah. Right? It would go down.
I mean, it's less possible. Stressful. I'm assuming there's a lot of computers today, right? So you basically plug in, this is the medication they want, and the computer will flag any complications that if you're taking these other medications, you shouldn't do this. And so the pharmacist, I mean, they obviously have to have training. Right. Don't get me wrong. You go to pharmacy school to do this. So there's clearly training, but I think a lot of the specifics now are basically built into automated systems. So you shouldn't be making huge mistakes as a pharmacist.
Right.
So maybe it's gotten easier, but
I don't know.
Less risk averse.
Right. In absence of, knowing it, you could make the assumption that it's sexist, but I thought that was odd that exactly supported the idea I was just saying in a totally different field of software development. So I think that's interesting.
And then the last one that I would give where you're looking within a profession and you're seeing weird variation. There was a study that I read in graduate school, which, that's 15 plus years ago now, but they were looking at a whole bunch of graduates from the same law program. So they all graduated from the same law school. And of course, there's going to be differences in terms of variation, right? Like who ranked the highest and where they end up. But what they did is they looked to see kind of the trajectory of women versus men in different law firms. So they were looking at just men and women as they went into law firms. How did they end up kind of progressing through these law firms? And one of the things they found that it helped to explain the pay gap is women tended to get shunted into not being like a top level practicing partner, but being in charge of pro bono work. So the free work that they do to volunteer, or the philanthropic work, or
it's not going to bring in the money.
Exactly. Or they were doing kind of diversity stuff. Hmm. So the less like high paying, jobs that these big firms would get, that's where women tended to be funneled, was in those directions.
Okay, but,
and as a result,
but is it by the choice of the women, or is it the law firms
not
pushing
in that there? In that one, it was not. So the women were not wanting to do this, but while their compatriots, their male compatriots, were being asked to like, oh, take on this responsibility, the women were being asked like, well, you know, we think you'd be really good in this area of the firm, and that's the pro bono area. And so they started to see like, why is this happening? And they talked to the people. So this was literally, I mean, it wasn't like thousands of people. It was hundreds that they tracked over time, over like a 15-year window. And then they went and interviewed them. And they're like, is this where you wanted to be? And she's like, no, this was the position that opened up that they like, were like, this is what we want you to do, is do the pro bono stuff.
This is interesting. Those 45 engineers, right? The three of them were women. One was horrible, and we eventually fired her. Second one was really weird, really weird, and awesome engineer, probably one of the best at the company. Really weird girl, like not girly girl at all, right? Just like very eccentric and strange and odd, very atypical of most females that I would interact with. And but she was awesome. She was awesome, and I enjoyed working with her. And then there was another one that was just, you know, basically typical woman. And she ended up doing a lot of, she was on a team, and she would organize like a team chat, a team get together, stuff we'd never done before, right? And we'd introduce like, hey, at the beginning of our stand-up, let's talk about a funny thing about us. Okay. And we'd like spend 5 minutes chatting stuff that we would never have done before. Right. Hmm. And she wasn't I don't think anyone pushed her into it. She just kind of like took that and it made her kind of a leader role in a way, because she kind of became, I don't know, the mother of the team in many fashions. But, I don't think like, she didn't get pushed into any direction or anything like that, but I thought that was interesting that she took that role. She seemed to take that role on as herself, and like, I don't know, like, you know, there was this charity thing that we went and we gave a check to a bunch of needy kids at school, and she volunteered to go to that, right, and give the check out, and she went and she did like cool stuff. She went to like a several engineering for women fairs, and mm-hmm. she'd go to those things, and they were like promoting women in engineering, stuff like that. It's great, right? But none of the guys are going to that stuff, right? She'd go during work hours, right? And she'd be like, I'm going to this thing. We're like, great, you know, it was great. But none of the guys are going to this like touchy feely stuff, right? And it's like, does that, you know, would that have, it was the guys that stayed, are they working on the high money making, super mission critical projects, right? While she was gone, right? It's like, maybe. And so that's interesting. Like, how much are they being drawn, lured to that versus, and directed to that versus them being attracted to it? I don't know, right? And how much does it hurt them, right? That's interesting. So,
well, I've been hearing about big pushes. You know, my buddy that was in, he graduated 3 or 4 years ago. As an engineer, there were big pushes on college campus to get women into the programs,
right?
Like big scholarships and that kind of stuff. I don't think we're placing enough emphasis on the difference between men and women. I think we just like different things, and that's a generalization, but I think it's largely true. I don't think women are really fascinated by engineering. You know, obviously some are, but I think the more I think about that Jordan Peterson thing, men are attracted to things, women are attracted to people. I just think that's true.
And, Ryan, do you think that's true?
I think it would be insane to say that there are no differences between men and women. At the same time, I think the differences are often accentuated when they're probably not as big as we really think they are. There's pretty compelling evidence at this point that there's no difference in competency in math between men and women, which ultimately is kind of the path that you have to go down for things like engineering. Where the divide starts to happen is in the reward structure for men and women pretty early on, and then the environment that they're going to be working in. So a lot of women end up not wanting to work in some of these fields because they are male dominated and they don't feel comfortable in them.
You need to watch Jordan Peterson because he talks actually a lot about this.
He sounded like Jordan for a second.
Well, about these overlaps, because he'll talk about and say men and women are more alike than they're not alike, right? Mm-hmm. And he'll say it's only on the extremes that they're, and he'll talk about like most men are, you know, most violent people are so most people in jail are men, right? And he's like, because he's like, if you meet a violent person, they're most likely a male, right? Just because that's on the extremes. And he talks about, and most rich people, like uber crazy rich, is going to be a male because they have these certain tendencies that are exhibited on the extremes. And so that's interesting. You were saying that coincides.
I had the same thought when he was talking. He sounded like Jordan for a second.
Jordan Peterson-esque. Yep.
But I hate Jordan. He's wrong about everything.
I have not said that yet. Stay tuned for season two. We're going to go through his whole book. I'm not necessarily looking forward to it. I don't know what he's wrong on, right? But in my very beginning reading of that my very beginning reading of that book, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be bad. But yeah. No, and he was definitely wrong on the statistics. So I don't know. I mean, so Jordan Peterson is a psychologist, but he's clearly not a quantitative psychologist. And there is a big gap between those who do qualitative stuff. So they do interviews, they do historical comparative stuff. He does historical comparative stuff. I do numbers. So I'm a quant. He's a qual person. And when he was saying like, oh, we just need 18 more variables. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so absurd. There are so many factors that go into determining how many variables you can have in a model, when the model starts to lose its viability because of how many variables, the quality of the, it's way complicated. Hmm. Not that you guys care, but yeah.
Nope.
He was, nope, not at all. So to hear him talk about it as simplistic as he did, I was like, no, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
He's on a national interview, and you should watch the interview. It's hilarious. He destroys that woman, but he would have put people to sleep if he would have just started saying what you're saying. Let me get into the quantitative.
Did I put you guys to sleep?
That interview is one of the interviews that kind of skyrocketed him to fame. Yeah,
that is the one. That's the one that put him on the map.
Well, he got on the map from the original campus.
I thought it was the confrontations with the students.
And then that's kind of put him in the light, and then he went on that and did that interview, and that just like boosted him.
That's what put him on the public stage. But what put him on the map, I guess, was when he opposed Bill C-17 or whatever in Canada. It was a compelling speech, and he went in front of the parliament and told them to pound sand. And then people started looking into his videos and stuff. But yeah. Can't wait for the Jordan stuff. I love him. He's amazing. Ryan's going to love him.
All right, cool.
So tell us our question for the week, Josh.
All right. Question from posted by my friend TJ, a good buddy, on YouTube. This was for... does the mainstream media have a liberal bias? Our last episode, he said, good episode. What do you guys think about the following? What is the main goal of the majority of media outlets? I think it is to make money. To that point, would it make sense for them to be biased, which in turn creates traffic for them, which makes them more money?
I'm just going to fixate on that first part, which is good episode. So let's just leave it at that.
So, yeah, that's interesting. You know, this is, I think we all agree it's make money. But what I think is interesting is their approach. And I think in media, there's probably always this short-term and long-term profitability. that they're battling, that there's the median's constantly always battling, right? There's the short term gotcha stories that are hype, a lot of have a lot of hype, and like the rise of Huffington Post, right? With, and it's Huffington Post does a lot of like, I don't know what the name for that genre is. It's just like clickbaity kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. And they've done well with that. But I think it comes at the expense of credibility and like, are they an outlet that's, you know, genuine or
yeah, credible in the least.
And I think that comes at the expense, right? When they go for short-term things.
I think he's probably right. I mean, obviously they have to make money, but there are some media outlets still, and I'm thinking not just TV, right? So obviously print media, which is now largely online. There are some that are nonprofit, so they're not designed to make massive profit for shareholders. And some of them, you know, at the end of the day, they still have to get clicks. They have to have subscribers. They have to have people who are paying the bills. But I'm just thinking about my local paper, the Tampa Bay Times, which I support. They clearly have to get people subscribing. They have to get the clicks and whatnot. But they also do long form investigations. So they did one recently on a lead recycling plant here in Tampa that basically was not following any of OSHA's guidelines and was poisoning all of their workers. All of their workers had massive amounts of lead in their blood. And nobody was doing anything about it. So the federal government wasn't doing the inspections that they're supposed to be doing. And it took the Tampa Bay Times doing like this long form series of like six big, big articles where they went in and showed like all the kids are being born with birth defects. The people are all dying at super young ages. Their blood level, their lead level in their blood is crazy high, way above any acceptable standards. And finally, that got the federal government to step in and start doing investigations. So I think there is a public service aspect to some media outlets where they're trying to find problems and shine the light of media attention to those problems. You know, they still have to make money, but I think there is that public service initiative and motivation behind it.
The thing that stands out to me about that question is, yes, I believe they're focused on making money, of course, but it almost seems like the propaganda part of what they're trying to do is actually ruining their business model. Because if you look at all the big media firms, most of them are going, you know, they're losing revenue now because now we're in the age of cutting the cord. That's what it's called, right? Everybody's cutting the cord and just going to Netflix and that kind of thing. So these corporations, I think they're kind of dinosaurs at this point. They're not keeping up. I think they're making less money. And you look at like CNN, especially during the Trump administration, they doubled down on everything, even though their viewership during Trump, it was good because everybody wanted to see all the crazy stuff that was happening between CNN and Trump and Jim Acosta. But now their ratings are falling through the floor, right? But they've doubled down on their take and their liberal bias. So it's an interesting question. You would think if they're just focused on money and there's no propaganda aspect of it, they would be more mainstream, more right down the middle, like we were arguing last week. But a lot of them have just doubled down at the expense of viewership. That's an interesting question.
I'm looking for this. I'm trying to find it because I thought I wrote it down in for some previous research. There's this article that, or this like kind of podcast, and they were talking about media and kind of the cult of personality is what they're going on about. But they quoted a CNN executive saying, and I want to get it right, but I can't find it here, but they said, she says Trump was really bad for people, but man, it was good for CNN.
Yeah.
And which basically saying like, this is garbage, right? We're giving, you know, Trump saying crazy stuff, we're covering it and it's not good for society, but man, we're making money off of this right now. Right. And I have heard that ratings have gone down for many of the left leaning media outlets that were relying, you know, that had kind of a steady flow of kind of Trump bashing. They were getting a lot of eyeballs from that.
Most of them have dropped precipitously since Biden took office.
Well, there is research that has come out recently suggesting people are more likely to click and engage on controversial stuff. This is what Facebook is getting hammered about right now.
Just shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. Right?
Yeah. So if you do go to the two ends, you're more likely to get clicks and get people to engage. I don't know if you guys have been following the whistleblower from Facebook. She's basically saying, like, Facebook knows that that's what they're doing. They're encouraging that kind of posting. And they also know that this is tearing society apart, but it's good for their bottom line.
Right. No, I heard something about that media outlets love to say the statement they say before the warning of, like, this is graphic material or something like that. Viewer beware. That's like a
automatic click.
Yeah, totally. Right. Of like, this is going to be good, everybody.
Really?
So
I always click.
And it's like they love getting stuff where they can say that because it's actually good. And so I don't think this is exclusive to Facebook, right? They think this is they know that any action fighting controversy, right? It's going to get clicks. And even though it makes us more, you know, hate each other more and more partisan, that they're, that, you know, they want, it makes money and they can't help themselves.
Yeah.
No, they cannot.